Welcome to the Spotlight with Sean Taylor.
Thanks, Fred. This is Sean, and I'm pleased to present the podcast version of the most recent live performance of The Spotlight with Sean Taylor.
Tonight, we have people that have been on TV for food-related things.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, our first guest was on a TV show that you guys might be familiar with it if you watch the Discovery Channel. It's called Go Ahead, Make My Dinner. So please welcome, Go Ahead, Make My Dinner's Duncan Murdoch. So you were on Go Ahead, Make My Dinner.
Yes.
And that is obviously a play on words from
Go ahead,
Dirty Harry.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a show that originated in England, I think. And it was much more successful there because here it was like a season or half a season.
Uh-huh.
But came over here and I was invited to, yeah, I got on the show and finagled my way onto the show.
So you are not, you're not cook in the show.
No.
But you are in the show.
Well, I at the end I become a cook. But I go, the concept of the show, should I tell you about the show?
Yeah, I was going to ask
the concept?
Yeah.
The concept is that it's a cooking show that has two chefs in the region,
mm-hmm.
and they come to the show, and they invite one person, they invite someone who types in, sends in their cooking challenge, or something that always goes wrong when they cook, like, you know, I burn water, which is impossible,
wow.
But... you know, problems like that, and you go on the show, and then they solve the problem, these two chefs, in a certain amount of time with a certain amount of ingredients, and then I get to choose which chef I like, which dish I like best, and then I go home and cook it. And the crew then comes with me and takes me cooking what I just learned to,
What is the purpose of choosing a better chef? It seems like that's sort of a throwaway move.
There's a competition.
Right, it's a competition.
Right. So kind of like Iron Chef there?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, I shouldn't be choosing the best chef, which I kind of did.
Oh.
I was like, I got there and I'm like, we hate this woman. Like, she's on, this chef kept coming back to the show. And like, we don't, all the, like, PAs were like, we don't really like her. But, you know, if you choose her, that's cool. You know, it's up to you. But we don't like her. And so I was like, okay. And you see, I don't know, but I rejected her. It was really mean. I shouldn't have done that. But her dish, one of her dishes was really sour.
Uh-oh.
I say it online. I mean, on air.
You might have it.
And yeah, I'm like, it's sour. Because they tell you, they're like, don't, when you taste the food, they're like, don't say it's good or bad. You know, use creative adjectives. Use things that'll help people, know what it tastes like. So I'm like, sour. She's like, that's the coriander, and I was like, okay, moving on.
And, your mouth is sour, but your face said disgusting.
Yeah, it was horrible.
It's horrible for yucky. What is this?
So I chose the other guy.
Well, let's see some footage of it, right?
Dinner, the most appetizing hour on television, where two amazing chefs show us how to make fast, easy, and delicious dishes.
That's the best part.
They only get a few ingredients and a few of the basics that most of us have in our kitchen. And do you have a lot of time to make dinner? No. So we give our chefs just 20 minutes to create as many dishes as possible. But we promised you a cooking challenge, so let's meet Duncan. Duncan, come on in. You have a problem in the kitchen?
My problem is I cook too much Italian food.
I don't see that as a problem, but you want to do what? Do more?
Expand my horizons, move on, you know, eat besides Italian.
Who are you cooking for?
My girlfriend.
All right, so we're going to work on this. What ingredient do you want to work with?
Whole chicken.
I want to introduce you to a couple people that are going to solve your problem.
Okay.
First up, let's meet our chefs. Michael Schulson, the executive chef of Next is Sue Torres, executive chef and owner of Sueños in New York City. Michael, great cooking tips. They're going to give you all fantastic ideas. You're going to pay very close attention. And afterwards, you're going to decide who made your dinner. You're going to go back to your house and prepare that dinner for your girlfriend.
Yeah?
Sounds like a surprise, but no, you're going to be able to pull this off after you listen to them. All right, go on over there.
Yeah,
the stage is set right there.
Oh man, so stupid. The thing is, I got on that show under the pretense that I wasn't an actor. I was supposed to be a normal guy because I actually, when I was in the park, I was with a friend in the park, and she was like, "Hey, meet these people right there." I was like, "No, no." And she's like, "Meet them. Their dog's name is Duncan." It's like, all right, yeah, that's kind of cool. The dog's name is Duncan. So, hey, talking it up. Turns out she works on the show, and she hooked me up with one of the casting people, and I met, and then I got on the show because all I wanted to do was get on TV when you know just as an actor. And so during the whole thing, like I wasn't trying to be me or like an actor. And at one point, the PAs pulled me over. They're like, the director. And I was like, no. So I kept on trying to act normal, and like at that point when they're like, "So what do you want to make?" And I'm like, "Whole chicken." Before I was like, I tried to like think that it just like came to my mind. I was like, "Whole chicken? How's that?" And they're like, "No." So it was a bunch of cuts. It wasn't just one thing. Yeah. No, it was like over and over. It was, you know.
So the thing where you said sour, did that air?
Yeah.
So even though that wasn't something they wanted to hear or something
that aired, yeah. Oh. But they had me on such a tight leash on that show. If you guys ever do like a show where you're supposed to be yourself, you're not going to feel like yourself. Even if you're pretending to be someone else like I was. But like you're not gonna be comfortable. Well, maybe you are. Maybe normal people are and actors aren't comfortable. But they had me so regimented, and the guy, you could see, he has his hand on my back making sure I wasn't gonna say anything wrong or anything, and they edited it up, chopped it up, and
I watched the entire episode, and there is a lot of him steering you. I mean, I feel like
yes.
I could almost, when you were supposed to walk to the side, I almost felt like him pushing you.
Yeah.
Like, "Hey, what's going on over there?"
Yeah. It was bizarre. It was really weird.
How long is this show? Do you know more about this particular show? Like you
this
half a season or something like that. Over here?
I mean, none of you have heard of it, right?
No.
So. Maybe an episode? A season, I mean? I don't know how long. Maybe it's still on the air.
Yeah, because during it, it almost feels like the guy, like he would be like, "Oh, we're going to find out, this chef right here is going to teach us how we're going to, oh, we're going to commercial. All right, he's going to do that when we get back." And then it comes back and it's like, the guy's already cut his chicken, so now he's, you know, he's got to, like, reconstruct the chicken.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
During the episode, the guy has to reconstruct the chicken. It's 20 minutes, they're still, you know, ticking down.
Oh, right, it's supposed to be timed and everything, but they had more time than that, really. More time. Yeah.
Whoa, and more than 20 minutes.
Yeah, they had a little bit of leeway.
Well, there's also, like, the rules, it's funny that one's not, like, strictly adhered to, because
right,
there's a part during this where she uses croutons, right?
Right, that's... can't use croutons. She gets the rules.
Get some bread, right? Notice bread was not one of the ingredients that was there, right?
Yeah.
But she grabs bread
she
anyway.
She cheated, that's why I didn't choose soup.
Wait a minute, how does
she's a cheater.
Why does she have access to other ingredients if it was only...
Maybe that's the reason why everyone hated her, because she was like, she bent the rules all the time.
Wow.
So we probably want to see you decide, right, on which one you ended up going, how you ended up going about that.
Yeah.
I have like a clip of that. And then just right after that, it goes right into you
cooking
it. Yeah. Making it
happen. For my girlfriend, who is a vegetarian.
No way.
Notice what I'm cooking for her.
Your girlfriend.
The meatiest dish you can think of.
Nice.
Chicken wrapped in bacon.
Michael and Sue never fail to impress. In just 20 minutes, they created 6 dishes. Amazing work, great ideas. Now, Duncan, it's time for you to decide. Let's get tasting. Michael, tell him what he's going to try out here.
Here.
the kebab and we'll help you out here.
Thank you. It's nice you get that personalized service like that.
That's the kebab with the fresh herbs.
Okay.
A little the olive puree. Real simple to make at home. Just make sure you don't put the pits in the machine.
Yeah.
You can taste this piece here. Taste it with the sweet potatoes. You have the soy bacon vinaigrette. You have the sweetness from the potatoes.
Impressive. I like the smoothness, the buttery, the sweetness.
I do too.
And there's a man.
But somebody does, right?
And then you have the bacon wrapped. I guess you're waiting for me to cut it again, then.
I'm telling you, Phil, you got to save room for all again.
Yeah. Just you want to make sure you taste it all together. You get the crispiness of the bacon, you get the tomatoes and the avocado.
All right, well, Sue's got some fresh out of the oven, and she's carving it right in here, too.
Well, I want him to start with the...
Hey, hold on a sec. Hold on a sec. I heard something about toast earlier.
I think the toast is toast.
The toast is toast.
Toast is toast.
Absolutely. That's a chilled avocado and grapefruit soup.
It's very sour.
That's the this is the chicken, and I saved a piece of the crust for you, which is sweet potato. That's sweet potato with a little bit of chili. So sweet potato is pureed with crushed red pepper.
It's very nice. I like the crunchiness.
And that is the hot sweet potatoes and some scallions and chicken.
It's smooth.
All right. You've tasted all
stuff.
You take one of these back, make them for your girlfriend. Duncan, who made your dinner?
Well, it was all really good. It was really good. And I love I really do. But I love the coriander in that. I never use coriander. It's not an Italian spice. So so I think Michael gave my
Here's the deal. You're going to go home. Okay. You're going to make this for your girlfriend. Guess what? We're coming home with you. We're going to see how well you do.
Okay.
All right, you ready for that challenge?
I am ready. Well, really good.
Chicken butterfly style. Good thing I cut these breasts horizontally. You got a nice sharp knife. You add some sea salt. Snow on the chicken. Choppy, choppy. Oh, yeah. That's the sound of it. This. Cut along. And you just go like that. And this is the hot stuff. Go like that. Give it a twist.
Ooh.
Never thought you could peel an avocado. It's gonna be good, baby. It's gonna be good. Oh yeah. That's the sound of a good meal. Actually, it might even look better than Michael's. And I think he'd be proud of me, because he taught me something new. Smell it? Oh, yeah.
I can hear it.
You should go sit down. It's almost ready.
Okay.
Yep, Tessie.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Good. Good. I'm really impressed.
Michael for teaching me something new. Thanks, Michael.
Oh, yeah.
You look rolling. You
know,
like the crazy rolling?
Yeah,
like, as if you care. Yeah. Here is this part.
This is when he's real.
So, how is your girlfriend? She's so happy that you learned how to cook something new, but yeah. the dish is loaded with baked chicken.
Yeah. Are you here?
Yeah.
Yes. Was it tasty?
I didn't really eat it.
Yeah, so. It looked like it.
Magic.
Yeah. It was, she took a bite of the avocado and tomato, I think. Yeah.
So, you know, avocado and tomato, I didn't see those.
I know, yeah. Ingredients. It was a side dish. It was a side dish. But I did learn one of the most valuable things was the cutting of the avocado. Do you know?
I've never cut one up.
Have you ever seen that before?
Yeah.
That would be good.
You cut alongside and then chop it again.
Yeah, you cut alongside and you just how you know how I did it. Chop it in the middle and pull out the pit, but then you got the pit stuck on a knife. So the only way you do it is just you bite it off. You just gnaw it off.
But it's a pit
off the knife. Yeah.
So you're not supposed to eat that, right?
No, that's how you get it off the knife. That's how I do it.
Now, but I learned something.
Yeah, just twist it around.
And avocado is what they use in guacamole, right?
Yep.
Would it be really hard to just scoop out the pit with a spoon or something?
I don't know. You try it out. I mean,
it's encased in like avocado, which is pretty soft, so you could probably just
Theory.
That was pretty cool, though. I mean, I think that's what they would do in the in like a kitchen, in a, you know, a thing. A chef would go, and then somehow it would flip off. Or he probably has someone there to bite it off. Someone else.
I imagine at Benihana's, they probably have it. If they had it avocados, that would just like load up his head into his catch.
Is Benihana's a good restaurant?
You never been there before?
No.
Are you kidding? You gotta go.
Alright. Wow. Let's do the show.
It's like, what do they call it? What are those types of restaurants called where they cook in front of you? Like the oven is like right in front of you and.
Show
on
our
news. No, Japanese, like teriyaki.
There's a name for it. It's at.
Mongolian barbecue?
No. It's so long.
Such an S. Kamikaze.
No. Benihana.
How many syllables?
Showa.
God, it's an H word, I think.
Hibachi.
There we go. Ah. Thank you, guys. Hibachi, yeah, they look in front of you. And the thing about Benihana is that it's fancy. It's sort of like the chef always like does all kinds of cool tricks and stuff. And like an onion volcano, but he puts oil in the layers of onions and then spots out stuff. And he'll chop up the shrimp for you and then take the tail and go, whoa! And he'll like catch it in his hat. And we're getting off topic. It's really fun.
So how much of cooking was new to you? In other words, of that, not just that particular, you do cook a lot because it says
you cook
Italian food.
I do cook a lot, yeah. The newest, I never made a roulade before.
What is roulade?
So, roulade is just it's a word for roll. So it's like, you know, it's a roll of whatever, chicken and bacon and spinach in that case. Roulade.
Did anyone see this show and then say, Duncan's on, go ahead, make my dinner?
I'm going to say no. But if I were to say yes, it would have been more intriguing for everyone. But no. I don't think anyone, if they have, they were too embarrassed to bring it up in front of me. No. No one that I know has told me that they have seen that show.
When was it on? What time of day?
Probably like, like 2 in the afternoon or something. I'm not sure.
But then since you were an actor before this, you jumped at the opportunity to be on TV.
Yeah.
And then since then,
I thought I could use it for my reel, which I don't think so. I tried. It just didn't work.
I like it. I mean, I watched it like 3 or 4 times. What type of role?
You watched like for fun, like the couple of times.
It's hilarious. Because it's funny how your suspicions get confirmed when it's like they didn't like the woman, and it was like during it you could sense that like the cameraman was sort of like. I have to do a close-up on it?
There's so many inner politics in shows like that. It's just crazy. And when you go in, it's just like you have to figure it all out. And you don't want to do the wrong thing. So the only freedom I really had was to actually decide on which dish I wanted. Uh-huh. But even then, it was tainted by all the politics. And,
When you showed up that day for the shooting, how much instruction did they give you?
A good amount. They told we, if I remember correctly, we had like a little bit of a run through. But other than that, they were just like, you come in the beginning, then you go to the side, and then there's one point where you're supposed to go and get some ingredients and come back. Mm-hmm. And so it was, some basic instructions. But, yeah, and actually, remembering it, we kind of rehearsed what they wanted me to say. Like, I cooked too much Italian food, and then he was going to come over and have small talk, and we kind of rehearsed the small talk, and so, just like, so. Yeah, I guess thinking back on it, I was like, as they walk through the whole thing.
Yeah, rehearsing the small talk.
Yeah.
And it's so little the chance. It's just
like, Well, if you had an opportunity to be on another cooking show, would you jump at it?
No. No. Well, no. Because, I don't know, like, it's just like, that's kind of like reality TV in a way. They, I mean, you're up to, it's, you're just giving yourself up to their production. And, like, you really are kind of a puppet, in a way. So it's like, you're really not in control of like, how you come off. And then they edit it, and, you know, there's stuff that I can see they like, you know, they edited it out and they brought down the levels, and there's stuff that I did that they just basically got rid of. So,
how easy is it to go from at the very end when you evaluate? Because my observation of cooking shows is you watch these people cook, these chefs, they're really good, you know, top chefs, you know, doing these amazing dishes, but I don't know how they taste.
Yeah.
But they look good.
Right.
Like all six of those looked really...
Yeah.
Five out of six of those looked really,
and
really
even
good.
One of the chicken dishes wasn't even cooked all the way.
Oh,
so
man.
That's why you cut off like the edge piece, because it was cooked. So.
But how did you go then from one to the next and then still know which one was the best tasting? Or do you think that maybe if you had a little more time, you might have like chosen to like say... clean your palate, then try the next one.
Yeah, I didn't ask about that. It was like over in between.
No, it was like on to the next. I still had food in my mouth, but like, you know, it's like one on to the next. But the bacon really got me there. It really did.
I love bacon.
Yeah, I love bacon. Of course, if you're the premise is to make it for a vegetarian girlfriend, though.
I know, right?
Did you mention that ever? I bring it up, and they said just don't mention that.
I told them, and they're like, I didn't want it. I still wanted to be on the show, and I was still trying to disguise that I wasn't an actor. And then like, I choose this dish that she couldn't eat, but they assured me that it wasn't a problem. And, you know, they're just going to edit it out. But I didn't really bring it up to the higher ups. I just kind of slipped it in with people who weren't like calling the shots.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Duncan, for joining us. Is there anywhere that these folks here can see you on TV? Maybe not necessarily on a cooking show, but maybe on a movie or.
Well, I'm on Forensic Files, so if you're up, like. Couple people have seen that. I'm in a gay menage a trois with a cop.
Yes!
Gay actor. That's pretty awesome.
Next week's theme is gay menage a trois. Might be back.
But if you see The Good Shepherd, this isn't really big at all. I mean, it's like I was a background in The Good Shepherd, and there's a shot of me in The Good Shepherd. So if you see it when the Yale section starts, it's like a two-shot of me and another guy. So. Some people have seen it, some people haven't. It's like really quick, but
I'll keep my eyes peeled because I do intend to watch that movie.
Yeah, check it out.
But anyway, thank you, Duncan, for joining us. Please stick around for the rest of the show.
All right. I'm used to people just telling me where to go.
You do what you want on this show.
For instance, we were just talking about cooking shows, and now, I mentioned I was going to Boston to my mom, and so she was talking about Boston-related things. That's how come Boston baked beans and New England clam chowder got mentioned. But then she threw in the Boston Strangler. And I was like, I know nothing about the Boston Strangler. Do you know anything about the Boston Strangler?
I actually don't. I guess he's one of the lesser known serial killers, or, you know, in popular culture, whatever, compared to Son of Sam. And,
Well, you want to find out? Who knows anything about the Boston Strangler? Just shout it out.
I know Tony Curtis in the movie.
Played by Tony Curtis in a movie.
The Boston Strangler.
Okay.
He, like, terrorized Boston for a good while and just kept strangling people.
Well done. Absolutely. Okay. Boston, he strangled people.
Yeah, in the 80s maybe? No, 70s or something? We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out. Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, everyone can hear you, Mom. So you have this hobby where you like to read books on serial killers, right?
Okay, I read books, magazines, and try to watch all the shows that come on about. Yeah.
Okay, so I went to Boston and wanted to find out more. I remember if anyone listened to the podcast, I've asked her about a couple of other serial killers in the past. So in a segment called a Serial Killer Minute. So this is just another Serial Killer Minute. And we wanted to feature the Boston Strangler.
Well, he's fine. Yeah, he's a good one to talk about because there's still not really sure that he even strangled anybody.
What? They're not sure he strangled anybody?
He, Al Gustavo was the Boston Strangler debut movie. I'm here with my cousin. Al Gustavo was the one who was accused. He was put in jail, prison for the murders. There were 13 of them. But and then he was killed in prison a few years later, so they can't check on him now. But they did some DNA testing later and everything, and they pretty much determined that he might not even have done the killings at all. So all the stories about the Boston Strangler might be incorrect.
Speaking of the stories of the Boston Strangler, so what was his who were his victims, and what's the body count?
13 women were strangled in Boston during that couple-year period, and they were, the MOs, the modus operandi, were different for some of them, so there's theories now that they were killed by several different people, but he confessed to the crimes. Effley Bailey was his attorney, and
Effley Bailey, he's the guy...
...to the crimes, and so for the city of Boston, that was very convenient.
Is Effley Bailey the guy who was on the OJ defense team?
Yes, he was the same one, only this was in the mid-60s, 1964, 65, somewhere in there, but he did it, so he was a young man. This was kind of his first media exposure as an attorney.
So I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, so this guy confessed. Years later, they're saying it probably wasn't him, it was probably multiple people, but did the strangling stop after he was caught?
Yes, they did.
So why would they stop if they caught the wrong guy?
Because if you were strangling people and someone took the fall, I would, do my best to stop strangling, and someone,
They would. If you were doing your best to stop strangling, you wouldn't strangle in the first place.
Women still get strangled in Boston.
Oh, women still get strangled in Boston. That's a good point.
Yeah, but there was like a string of them. You figured that would have continued like shortly thereafter. And the movies, that's how it happened. They think they catch a guy, then another body's found. You know, that's just how I figured it. If they caught the wrong guy, that would be the clue.
Right, so they do think that maybe he at least strangled one of the women, right?
Well, he could have. He could have, but they have no real proof that he did. In fact, he confessed to different things. He did different things that on certain victims that didn't happen. So, The way they tell the story, if you ever watch the film about the Strangler, it's pretty good because it ends with the feeling that he's there.
The
guy that went to jail for it. Kind of exciting, it adds a little bit when you go to Boston if you're a woman by yourself.
In the movie, is the Boston Strangler played by Tony Curtis?
Oh, you gotta ask me that. I don't know. Did that sound right?
I think it's right. I think an audience member has mentioned it, and he usually knows.
That part I can't tell you, but I mean, I know I watched the movie and I remember the ending was kind of eerie because it was like, he could still be out there. Now that was the 60s, so probably, out there, probably, so he's at least not raping people now, right?
That's true. He would be pretty old, right?
He would be strangling, yeah. He would be old, but he could be strangling.
All right, well, thank you, Mom, for joining us for the Serial Killer Minute. And we'll be happy we live in New York.
Okay, yeah, okay. Nice talking to you, Tom. Good night.
Bye. No. She enjoys reading that stuff.
It's fun. It's very, very fun.
It's a good point, though, but, like, just because something stops doesn't mean they got the right guy. I mean, it adds evidence that maybe, it points to that, but,
Yeah.
What if he's still out there? Tony Curtis, is he still out there?
No.
No?
I think they caught him.
Well, I guess we can go shift gears and go right from serial killers right back into cooking, right?
That's an easy transition to make.
Well, why don't we then introduce our next guest, who is not on TV for a cooking show, but has been on TV multiple times.
All right.
But he is pitching a show that might be on TV. So please welcome Inside Jokes, Carl Arnheim. Well, Carl, very nice outfit.
Thank you. This is the outfit from my show, Cookin' Sheet. And my first rule of cooking is look the part. And I think, and like when I get up in the morning and I go for a glass of orange juice, if I'm not wearing anything, I don't even step foot in the kitchen without my hat, which is called a toque, and my apron.
Wait, you mean a chef's hat's called a toque?
Yeah, apparently it is.
Look at that, learning things.
I'm not a chef.
How much do you know about the chef's hat? Because as I was watching you enter with it, my question to myself was, I wonder why it's shaped the way it is. Does it help cooking in any way that it has sort of a fat?
Well, it's aerodynamic. If you open your oven door, there's a, you know, convection, right? So the air just travels up and over the hat.
Is that right?
No.
Is the toque right, though, right?
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's right. And I wear it back sort of Rasta style. And the goggles are for when I cut onions. I really do wear them when I cut onions.
You do a lot of cooking.
I do a lot of cooking, yeah.
And people are probably thinking, though, that you probably haven't been on TV.
I have been on TV a few times.
I have one of the clips. We showed it last week,
okay,
but you're in it.
Oh, great.
So I'm just going to fire it up. This is Carl Arnheider as part of the Hug Patrol. An improv everywhere.
This guy didn't believe it until he invited the Hug Patrol into his apartment.
Do you want to come in?
Instead of trying to trick New Yorkers with practical jokes, this group of pranksters takes their act on the street to cheer up way too serious New Yorkers. And if the mayor's approval ratings go up, these comedians may find themselves with a day job at City Hall. Okay?
Okay.
So you were on TV right there.
I was for that, yeah. We were in a kitchen. I don't know.
You were in a kitchen,
yeah.
Giving hugs.
Mm-hmm.
But you've been on TV a couple other times,
though,
right? Just address some of those, because
sure.
I don't have the clips, but...
With my football player build, I was on ESPN's... I can't think of the guy's name now, but I did the 100th anniversary of the Forward Pass. I recreated that. I was also a grunge expert in 1991 on Fox 5, talking about grunge. That's what happens when you go to NYU, walk through the park in ripped jeans, and they're like, hey, do you listen to grunge music? I do, in fact. Great. Well, we're doing a little segment on it. Would you be interested in doing that? I was actually wearing, I had long hair, and I was wearing a plaid hat backwards, much like this. So I went on. That was fun. I've been on for a few other things. I just don't recall what. Most things that I pitch to TV do not make it, so I've not been on for them.
But you do, are you pitching in a new cooking show?
Well, Cookin' Sheet is designed for the internet. So I don't have any aspirations to even put it on TV. It's meant to be a 5-minute cooking show. That's the only cooking show filmed in a rented apartment, you know, where the oven door is like slightly askew and there's no counter space and your refrigerator sucks and your dishes are dried on the floor because there's not even any room to do that. So,
I think we have an opening for it, right?
We do have a clip. I don't want to set it up, but we do have a clip.
All right, here it goes. This is from the pilot episode of Cooking Sheet.
That's right.
And it's a little hazy.
And it's a quick time. And I grew those butternut squash. It did. Wait for it.
seat is filmed in the kitchen without enough counter space to dry dishes. Cooking sheet.
Thank you. I'm really proud of that. Wow, thank you. That's great. I didn't. There's so much film for it. I'm learning to edit. So none of it is edited, but the actual opening is me like flailing around the kitchen with knives. It was very dangerous, and carrots were being slayed left and right. And the Chemical Brothers Block Rock and Beats is playing, and it's like woo 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 woo. You know that part is like the blenders going and stuff being pureed, and it's mad. But I'm still learning to edit. Otherwise. But the chocolate melting is true. That's real. I raise the board and then just leave it. But that's wild. It looks like it's quick time.
So
I mean, it looks like it's stop motion.
So yeah, that was edited. Was that filmed in real time?
Well, it was filmed in real time, but then I converted it to QuickTime to send to you, and now it's like every. But it makes me think I could pull off like a Gumby series just by converting something to.
Gumby has to melt though on a regular basis.
Oh. Well, If Gumby lived in my place, he'd melt.
So you put chocolate syrup on a cookie sheet.
Well, I refrigerated the cooking sheet. In the real one, in the real intro, it's frozen, so it could stay up there for a while because I did a lot of still photography. Because it's like the interstitial, you know, it's very technical. I don't know.
It looks pretty complicated.
It is. I went through a lot of Hershey's chocolate syrup to recreate my ship.
You know something that fascinated me? You mentioned that you haven't eaten fast food in a while.
I haven't in like 10 years. No.
10 years?
Yeah, 10 years. And it now it's for a more healthy reason, but I used to drive cross country all the time. And I'd be driving on 80 or 70 or whatever, but anywhere you pulled off, it was always a McDonald's. And I couldn't get, regional fare sort of disappeared on the highway. There's no, barbecue stuff. And what really got me was I would just drive to the West Coast as fast as I could. I wouldn't sleep or stay anywhere. I would sleep on the side of the road if I needed to, or behind a gas station or in a rest stop, but I wouldn't stay in a hotel. And I had a big knife under my side when I did it. But when I really did. It was a fishing knife. And
did you ever
No.
Brandish it?
No, thankfully no. But it was like 2:33 in the morning, and I just crossed the Rockies out of Denver. I peaked at the Rockies, and just as I came across the top, and really, it's so cheesy, but it really did look like the sky was right, 6 feet above me, and the stars were everywhere. It was pitch black because there are no highway lights. Just as I crested, right on the other side, there was a giant pole with the McDonald's logo with the giant golden M, and I thought right there, I was like, that's it, I'm done. I'm not supporting this anymore. It's horrible, and so I don't need fast food. I know, long story to say that, but
well, but that's great. You were way ahead of the
yeah, I know. Michael Pollan called me, and he said, "I'm writing a book called Omnivore's Dilemma," and then Eric Schlosser called me. "I'm doing this book called Fast Food Nation. Can you write the foreword?" And I agreed. And then he took a totally different slant with it, so he dropped the foreword. I did write I thought it was a pretty riveting essay about road trips and fast food.
Do you find that cooking in New York is more difficult or just the same as anywhere else?
I've cooked in probably three other locations. I find when you have money, that's helpful. Not that I'm a wealthy man, but I'm not in college or a musician anymore. And I find it's more expensive to cook in New York. You know, food costs more here for whatever reason. But I think it is. The cooking she started from my kitchen being a complete disaster. And I don't know how I think boats have bigger kitchens in some New York apartments. And if scooters had kitchens, they'd be bigger than some New York apartments.
Now, you mentioned that you grew some of that stuff.
I do. I have a garden. Yeah. I'm a gardener.
You have a garden in New York?
I do. It's about an hour north. Well, it was an hour north. My brother had a farm, and I had a big garden that was bigger than my apartment. And I grew all sorts of great stuff. I don't eat butternut squash, but I grew them. because a girl I was seeing liked butternut squash at the beginning of the growing season. So I was like, no problem, I will plant you butternut squash, which took over the entire garden. But yeah, and then this, my brother sold his farm and moved. And at the same time, my cousin inherited a farm, a 152-acre farm. And so now that's an hour north of what was previously an hour north. So I've got some acreage there. Yeah. I'm a big fan of growing. I don't necessarily eat it all, but I give it away.
How often does, say, a member of the opposite gender affect what you grow?
Just once. Just that one time. Yeah.
Was she around when it, when harvest?
No, we'd split up by harvest time. But but no, but we're still friends. And the beauty of it was, like, a lot of people in my office would be like, oh, you have butternut squash. So I actually met more people butternut squashing. You know, I think it goes, I'm squashing on you, is what happened. But, you know, it's hunter-gathering, you know. It's, if you can provide, they just come to you, and that's
it's like, it can be kind of like analogous to maybe she taught you something about yourself that you fostered with her, and when she left, you still had this with you, and that helped you with your...
Include that in the forewords.
I think the next one, well, butternut squash, if you cure it, it's really hard. It's rock hard, because that stuff was harvested in, I think, September, and it's still good. And you need a really sharp knife. And when you tear into it, like, it's almost savage. So I don't know if I should be like, Erica, you know, and just like wrenching these things open and taking off a finger. But butternut squash.
How often do you have to be at the garden in order for the things to keep growing?
Well, they grow without me, but. It's not like I help them along in that regard, but weeding is a problem, and watering was okay, and after two or three, I think I had that one for three seasons, I'd gotten it down to the point where I mulched it heavily so there were no weeds, and it did all right without me, and when there was a problem, I'd have to take, I had voles, and I would catch snakes in there, voles, they're like mice. But they're different. And they would make it in. And I had this, like, rodent sonic noise thing. It was like, it played sonically. It played, like, Iggy and the Stooges to keep everything away. And I had a fake snake in there. And the birds got my... I grow red currants, and the birds got my currants. And the second, my brother sold the farm and didn't tell me. He got engaged and moved to Minneapolis and bought this house in Minneapolis. And so he sold it. And... he was out in Minneapolis, and these people were looking at the house that day, and I waited down the block. And when I saw them drive away, I drove up. I backed the car up. I took out a shovel. I dug up all my red currants, and I was like, these people aren't getting these. I fostered for 3 years because it takes 3 years to fruit. And I dug them all up and threw them in there, and I, like, drove away in a huff. I was like, there's no way. So I'm hoping they grow.
How often do you cook your own harvest?
I've got nothing left now. It's just, I have basil. I cooked a ton of basil, and I made pesto, so that's still in the freezer. And the two butternut squash are left. But over the summer, I get really sick of cucumber salad, because the cucumbers do really well. I eat peas. You know, the problem is it all comes in at once. It's like I get 85 cucumbers in one shot, or I get, I had 40 butternut squash, or like 8 pounds of peas, or all the soybeans came in. So I just eat them all in like a fury.
That's my trouble. I love chili. I love to make chili, but then it's just me eating it.
Right.
My roommate's vegetarian, so like, if I make a vat of chili, it just means I'm eating chili for the next 2 weeks.
Freeze it.
And then, but then you still need to eat it soon, don't you?
Well, you have some time though when you freeze it. You don't stop the decay. You just delay the decay. Huh. Well, a little maxim from Cooking Sheep. yeah, but like I make a soup a week, and the soup just lasts me for a week. I just cook that on Sunday, which is an episode of Cooking Sheet, because the show's only 5 minutes, and it takes about 3 hours for soup to cook. It's a 60-part series on how to make beef barley soup in real time. Yeah, like on that. But that's true. That's one of the episodes. Another one is I explore the food markets of Chinatown, where they have amazing what's called offal meats, OFFAL, which is pronounced awful, and it's like kidney and tripe, which is the lining of the cow's third stomach, and brain and pig uterus. It's fascinating what I will not eat. So that's an episode. But the big one, pretty much the ratings, I'm pulling that one out for ratings, is the 60-part episode. How to make beef barley soup.
I have been to another endeavor of yours, which is Inside Joke.
Right.
I don't know if you guys have heard of this, but it's a talk show where Carl interviews pretty much the biggest names in the comedy industry.
Well, I invite the fellow biggest names in comedy to join me.
Exactly. That's what I meant to say.
Well done.
Listen to the tapes. Who gets the bigger laugh per episode? That's all I'm saying. I'm sure they get sustained laughs, but sometimes... Yes, it's true. I chat with comedic luminaries.
And you don't just chat with them, you also usually give them treats.
Yeah, I make Rice Krispie treats for each guest. I think that goes back a few years now to Chris Parnell. It was a way to buy a little time on stage. It was a way to make an awkward moment even more awkward. Really, because that's fun. You know, making an awkward... prolonging an awkward moment is great. So I make Rice Krispie treats for them. And without fail, everybody has either made a joke about it. One person in particular wouldn't stop making fun of them, but also wouldn't stop eating them. But everybody's like them.
You can name drop, by the way.
I don't want to name drop him. He's a sweet guy. But he would call them like various horrific figures from literature, and then constantly, you know, devour.
You must be good at making them by now.
I've perfected it. If I've perfected one thing in life, it's Rice Krispie treats. I think I have. Matt kicked them earlier. I did bring some. He kicked the Tupperware, so they are. I washed the whole thing. They're safe. And I'm germ-phobe, so I would not eat them if I didn't see it happen. But I start with. Can I give you my secret?
Yeah.
One, Rice Krispie treats were why I started buying good cookware. I bought a couple on nonstick deal. I spent like $60 on a pot just to make like the white trashiest snack food you can make. and then a few years ago I stopped buying butter. I started making my own because it's really amazingly simple.
You make your own butter?
I do make my own butter, yeah. So
that's got to be an episode of Cooking Sheet.
It is. It's the advanced episode. Well, Rice Krispie Treats are the advanced episode. It's like the advanced lesson of how to boil water. But it is. It takes like 12 minutes to make your own butter.
Are there like 1,200 episodes of Cooking Sheet?
Mm-hmm. At least, per season. When it's 5 minutes long, it's pretty simple to... I just need to edit them.
I like how you're learning how to edit. So you can do it real time.
Well, I still need... I mean, stuff blows up. And like there's a special guest, and we make out, like stuff like that has to. So I need to. It's 5 minutes, but you know, for every 5 minutes of footage, there's at least an hour of stuff on the floor. You know, so I do that. But I start with homemade butter. I make that, and it's 3 tablespoons of homemade butter. Then marshmallows are key. You can't use the big ones. You got to use the mini ones. They melt faster, and it's a game of patience, really. You don't want to use a lot of heat. Constantly stirring your marshmallows. Have everything laid out. Have a bag of marshmallows cut open before. Have your 6 cups of Rice Krispies measured out. And just never take your eye off it. Like, don't start melting the butter and then go to the bathroom. You don't want to brown your butter. And then stir, remove from heat, done.
So you have an ideal consistency, I guess, for a Rice Krispie treat. Because I've had some that are like cardboard.
We changed tapes, but we stayed sort of on the topic of marshmallows that go into Rice Krispie treats and how marshmallows can be used to preserve human beings.
If you're
encased, I'm not going to kill anybody.
If you're encased in marshmallow, you're pretty good. That's a theory.
Thousands of years from now, civilizations are going to find people encased in marshmallow.
Well, didn't Francis Bacon die from eating like a ham that was... This is how science works, you know. Francis Bacon, the philosopher, there was a ham, and he had this theory, this pre-refrigeration, and he had this theory that if he kept a ham in a snowbank, it would be okay. And then he ate the ham. Well, subsequently died. But, but you know, it takes that sort of experimental spirit to really move.
Francis Bacon died on, like, a hunch?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's how you test the theory.
Why didn't the ham keep?
I don't know. Maybe he took it out of the snowbank and just left it laying around for too long. I don't know, but that's that really happened. I don't. I have a refrigerator. It's on the freezer. And in tough times when the power's out, marshmallow. They got me through the blackout.
Nice. You just encased everything in marshmallow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just have a huge
if the freezer goes, I just start melting marshmallows.
So you've been talking about marshmallows, and we've been talking about food all along. I'm really curious to see just how good they are.
I don't, you know, when you ramp it up like that, I did make for the John Cat show. I did make some the demonstration guy.
It was a perfect pyramid.
It looks better now.
I did make for the last Inside Joke show with Jonathan Katz. I'm not name dropping; he was the guest. Nobody here knows who John Katz is. I did make enough Rice Krispie treats for the entire audience. I made 180 individual Rice Krispie treats. It was really cool.
How many boxes of Rice Krispies is that?
I think that was it was 18 cups. So I don't know.
Can you use generic Rice Krispies? Or you
had them. I've never tried the generics. I've made them with the cocoa, too sweet for me. And holiday, just don't find them anymore.
Well, I'm curious. I want Duncan to try one.
It's sour. It uses descriptive words.
Yeah. Wait, first of all, you don't have any dietary restrictions where you can't eat that, right?
No.
Are you a diabetic, allergic to marshmallow?
Thank you.
Or,
wow, that. Just, well, I don't want to change your. You're biasing Duncan.
That was a timid first bite.
It was just like when you make that up there.
You know, I'm on edge now.
It starts crunchy, gets chewy, and it's good.
Would you make these at home for your vegetarian girlfriend? I'm sorry. So, are you ready? I did make some for everybody, so
if you had to choose between him or the female chef, who would you pick?
I'll choose him.
Wow. I'd be happy. I'm going to use more coriander in the next bag. I don't eat them, actually.
You don't?
No.
You don't eat Rice Krispies?
No, I've made so damn many of them, I don't eat them.
Do you know, there's a guy, I don't know much about too many other types of food, but I know a lot about pizza.
Oh, I know you do.
And Frank Pepe is, first of all, is anyone from Connecticut or been through Connecticut?
Yeah.
Have you heard of the Connecticut Strangler?
Yeah.
Well, there's some really good pizza place in Connecticut. One of them is called Frank Pepe's. And Frank Pepe, he opened up his pizza place in 1925, and he makes coal-fired brick oven pizza. He is allergic to cheese and sauce. Cheese and tomatoes. So he made this delicious pizza, but couldn't eat it. So that's when he developed the clam pizza. Have you ever heard of clam pizza?
No.
Pizza with clam on it? No one's ever heard of pizza with clam on it? Should read my pizza blog. I talk about it there. But also, it's clam pizza. It doesn't have cheese. It doesn't have sauce. It just has clams. But then there's a lot of seasonings on it, on flatbread. So. And it's delicious, but it was just kind of like, it was nice because then he was able to make pizza for himself.
Sure. So
what would you take out in order to still make these appetizing for you?
I don't know that you can take anything out. It's three ingredients. I'm sorry, I left out the most important one, which is love.
Aww.
It's true.
No, we're pissed with love.
Yeah, I know. I'll just say this because I found this, it was a fun time. Dave Foley did Inside Joke from Kids in the Hall, and Dave, it relates to food. So Dave had one, and then I said, oh, the secret ingredient is love, my physical love, And then, Dave, I didn't use my physical love this time. Just for the huge Kids in the Hall fan. So, so that led to this whole discussion about flavoring one's bodily fluids. Now, I know this is a family show, but Dave, and this is on record, so I'm not spilling anything new, but Dave kept referring to his wife's ability to, my wife says that pineapple is the best thing you could eat beforehand. I think we all know what bodily fluid I'm talking about. So he would go on, and then we're talking about this, and then he hears this, like, off to the side of the stage, and it's his daughter. So Dave's just talking about all this in front of his daughter. So Dave, like, puts out his arms, and she comes running up. She's this adorable 3-year-old, 2.5-year-old, something like that. And then Dave says, oh, would you like to sing a song? And she says, no, because there are a lot of people and the lights and all, and she was pretty scared. So she runs off. And then I thought I would lure her back on to sing a song by offering her the Rice Krispie Treats, which we just talked about, including my physical love. And it really sort of got really awkward for both of us. And then backstage, right after the show, I was like, Dave, thanks a lot for doing this. I really appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed it. He's like, yeah, so my wife thinks that vegetarians really, they have the best flavor. And he just went on. Like, it was like a 10-minute gap, and he still went back into it. And I thought, oh, Dave's wife, she is an actress. And she must have a lot of experience. I don't know, like, I couldn't... The conclusion I was drawing from everything he was saying made me think...
These are delicious, though.
Yeah. When can people see Inside Joke or Cooking Cheat or You on TV?
I think the next Inside Joke is in February. But it hasn't been locked down. It's so occasional, I don't even know when. And Cooking Sheet, I hope, will be up in the next 2 or 3 weeks. Yeah. It's going to be off the Inside Joke site, which is inside-joke.com/cookingsheet, but it's not there yet. But it'll just be there. I don't know how many websites I need to run.
Well, thank you, Carl Arnheim.
No, thank you, Sean Taylor.
For coming. And also, thank you, Duncan Murdoch. Thank you. Big thanks to Sean Amaro. Mark Grenier in the booth, Louis, the band here, the MAGA Theater, Armando Diaz, and of course, Glenn Miller.
Thank you for listening to the Spotlight with Sean Taylor podcast. If you want to be in the audience at the next show, call the Magnet Theater at 212-244-8824 and make your reservations for Sunday, January 21st at 9:30 p.m. If you have been on TV and want to be a guest, please visit our website at thespotlightwithseantaylor.com and follow the Be Our Guest link on the left side.